Okay, real talk. We all have embarrassing moments in the bedroom. You know, like gas, bloating, indigestion, and more. And I hear from so many of you with stomach issues, and it's keeping you from the pleasure you so rightly deserve. Well, I got some great news. While studies show that gut issues directly impact our arousal, erections, and overall sexual health, I got a game changer for your overall wellness. Introducing Just Thrive Probiotic. It is my secret weapon for overall health and the fuel for my sex life. Just Thrive Probiotic isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is a clinically proven game changer, a gut superhero designed to up-level your passion and sex life. So no more embarrassing moments, only a life of gut-powered ecstasy. That sounds good, right? It's the first probiotic formulated with four ancestral survival strains, clinically guaranteed to reach your gut 100% alive. This probiotic is like your personal gut gardener, maintaining the health of your gut by eliminating bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and replenishing the good, making it a game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, and even your mood. With Just Thrive, you'll nourish your gut microbiome, fueling your mind, body, and soul. So say hello to increased libido, enhanced pleasure, and a whole new level of satisfaction. Oh, don't miss my episode, Why Gut Health is Sexy with Tina Anderson, where you can learn more about this groundbreaking company. For a limited time, you can try Just Thrive 100% risk-free by visiting justthrivehealth.com and enter promo code SEXWITHEMILY at checkout to save 20% off on a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic. So take charge of your gut health, take charge of your sex life, and live your healthiest life yet with Just Thrive.
You know, the other thing I've very much been present to, and so I want all your listeners to think about this, whether they're male, female, or other identified. For a woman to set a boundary, she's often called a bitch. I gotta tell you, that has backed me up sometimes. You know, like, oh, I don't want this person to think this of me if I say that wasn't a good job, or you didn't actually do what you said you were gonna do, or whatever. I think that that's an underneath cultural narrative that has really pushed back on a lot of women from saying their truth.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. To create our hottest, most fulfilling sex life, there is one critical thing we need. And no, it's not flavored lube, but I do love lube. We need boundaries and the ability to express them to others. But what is a boundary exactly? As a buzzword and an emerging concept, boundaries can improve every relationship, sexual or otherwise. Trust me. So on today's Best of Show, sex therapist, author, and my dear friend, Dr. Jennifer Fried and I help you figure out what your boundaries are, how to set them with others and actually follow through, and how to not let people steamroll over your values, especially when you're a people pleaser. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, join me in setting an intention for the show. I do it. I encourage you to do it. My intention with this episode is to help you understand the connection between boundaries and hot sex. When you know the conditions that help you thrive sexually, you can relax into the moment and enjoy the deep eroticism that comes from respecting yourself by telling others what you need. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, What to Do When Your Partner Says No to Trying New Things, is up at sexwithemily.com. Also, check out my YouTube channel for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me a question, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily, or just call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX, 559-825-5739. Always include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. And totally cool to change your name or remain anonymous. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. You're about to hear Dr. Jennifer Fried and I talk about boundaries and why they're so essential to every partnership, especially if you want your sex life to flourish. But first, real quick, I want to talk to you up front about codependency, which impacts so many relationships, and also learning how to set boundaries as a way to balance your relationship. I really want to do a show on these topics because, listen, I can continue to give you sex tips and advice and you can really take them in. But if there's an underlying dynamic happening in your relationship that you're not addressing, well, your sex life's going to suffer no matter what. So let's go in and heal these patterns that are disruptive and possibly unhealthy so we can all get on and have incredible sex and healthy, balanced relationships. All right, what is codependency? So codependency is a tricky concept because on the surface, it might just seem like, well, that's what you do in relationships. Of course we're codependent. Your partner becomes your everything. They complete you. It's what we hear in songs. You know, this idea of being helplessly in love with someone else. I'll do anything for them. It's portrayed as super romantic, when in reality, it's codependent. Because basically, you're putting all of your energy into supporting the people in your life, and maybe just your partner, without making space for or even considering what you need for yourself, what feels good to you. So their needs are more important than your needs. And that's codependency in a nutshell. This is why so many of us, though, might feel burnt out or taken advantage of or stressed or anxious because we have no time left for ourselves when all we're doing is caring for our partner. And just so you know, like a lot of dynamics, it stems from our family of origin. Maybe you grew up watching a parent who is codependent and you just repeat the pattern. I love this example from Psych Central of codependency in a romantic relationship. Okay, here it goes. Your partner is vegan. Well, you don't eat meat, but you decide to also give up dairy for their sake, even though they didn't ask you. Their main interests, sci-fi dramas, backpacking, craft beers, become your chief hobbies. And you adopt their friends as your own. You usually spend time together at their apartment since you know they really like being at home. And often, you stop by to help tidy up, put away laundry, do some cooking. I mean, they're so busy with work that you know they'd let their chores slide if you didn't help out. Plus, your support reminds them just how much they need you. When they share concerns and frustrations about work, you're always ready with possible solutions. When they explain they just want to vent and don't need you to fix anything for them, you become annoyed and frustrated. After all, you're their partner. Shouldn't you just know how they should handle the situation? Sound familiar to you? Does it resonate? Well, with codependency, the need to support others goes beyond what's generally considered healthy. And listen, it can be really challenging to keep a healthy sex life when you're constantly caring for your partner and you're not as aware of your own sexual desires and you certainly don't know how to ask for them. Now, this is key. If you behave in a codependent ways, you're not just offering support temporarily, just like your loved one's having a rough day or something's happening at work. You focus on caretaking. It's your main job, to the point where you kind of define yourself in relation to their needs. So here's some common signs of codependency. You have a very deep-seated need for approval from others. You have a pattern of avoiding conflict. You have an excessive concern about a loved one's habits or behaviors. That's the differing thing. We're all concerned about our partner's needs. Of course we are. They're our partner. We love them. It's excessive. It replaces your own needs, everyone else's needs, but your whole world revolves around their needs. You might even feel guilt or anxiety when doing something for yourself, and you do things that you don't really want to do to make others happy. You also have an overwhelming fear of rejection or abandonment. So basically, your need to support others goes beyond what's considered healthy. Okay, so why is this bad? I mean, maybe you're listening thinking, well, that doesn't sound so bad. You're a devoted partner. You're showing up in a relationship to be loving and supportive. But the flip side of codependency is not that great. Usually because one person is a caretaker and then the other one just takes advantage. They take advantage of you. They know you're going to be there and then eventually one of you feels really burnt out and they just keep taking and taking and taking and you feel depleted. So this happens all the time with sex. There's one person taking care of the other person's sexual needs and when they're doing that, they're all about their partner's needs, their partner's fantasies. When their partner wants to have sex, well, they're completely neglecting their own needs. So this leads to poor communication and losing touch with our own wants and needs. And that's the reality of codependency. So what is the solution then? What does a healthy relationship look like? Well, we really all want to be in interdependent relationships where you depend on each other. You don't just focus on their needs or, this is key, draw your value from self-sacrifice. I've done everything for them. You're just simply available when they need you, when they ask for support. A healthy, supportive relationship involves listening, striving to deeply understand your partner, and keeping in mind the concerns of another person. However, codependency is when that caring behavior crosses the line to direct or control them. A healthy dependence also means you state your own needs and desires. You ask for support when you're struggling. You let others know when they're asking too much of you without worrying they'll reject you. Oh, that's key. So a lot of why we don't state our own needs, whether you're codependent or not, or you're a people pleaser, the reason why we don't state our own needs is because we're so worried, and this might even be a subconscious, preconscious level, we're so afraid if we stand up for our own needs, they're going to reject us. And that's a learned behavior from childhood. That's why I'm taking time for this, because I think a lot of us are going to recognize ourselves or our partners in this scenario. If you want to know more about codependency, you can join Al-Anon, which is a great free 12-step program. Codependent No More is a great website and a great book. And really any book by Pia Melody, P-I-A Melody, will help you more with this concept of codependency. So what is one of the main solutions for codependency in a relationship? Well, boundaries. Boundaries are super buzzy today. We hear about them everywhere. But I get it. They might be hard to grasp. I remember trying to explain to a friend in her 20s, and she said, oh yeah, I learned about boundaries in elementary school. You know, there's something that divided states and countries, but she didn't learn anything about boundaries, and none of us learned anything about boundaries in relationships. So if you think about it, teacher showed you a map, and they explained certain types of lines are used to show boundaries between states and countries. And there might be a natural feature like a river, divided the property, but mostly the lines were not visible in real life. And even though we couldn't see those lines, pretty much like states and counties, like we respect them. Countries, we respect the boundaries. You cross over a border, there's a sign like welcome to Texas. We accept it. There's boundaries and we moving into another territory. So it's easy to grasp those kind of boundaries, but in relationships, it's a lot harder because there aren't any literal physical barriers between ourselves and other people, but we need it. Oh, do we need it? We need to set our own boundaries. But even when we think there's a boundaries, like an office cubicle or a large distance, boundaries don't always work. This is why we need to set emotional boundaries, because you're letting people know when they cross the line, how far they can go with you, what they should expect when it comes to your emotional support, your help, how often can they seek your help or advice, even to know how frequently you're going to get in touch with them. Do you ever feel guilty that you're not calling someone back or you're not always there for them and you feel like you're letting them down? Well, you just might need to set a boundary. Boundaries can be so hard to set. So here's some signs that your boundaries might need some attention. Saying yes to please others at your own expense. You don't get your needs met because you tend to fear conflict and give in to others. You often feel disrespected by others, but you don't stand up for yourself. You engage in people-pleasing behaviors in order to be liked and to receive approval. Doing whatever you want to get your needs met, believing that the limits don't apply to you. So here's the thing though, boundary people are also highly compassionate. So sometimes it's hard to set a boundary because we feel like someone's gonna be mad at us, but they're compassionate. And I know that might sound counterintuitive, but when we don't set boundaries, we get resentful. But when we do set boundaries, we're giving everyone the information they need to show up for us happily and enthusiastically. We are responsible for our own pleasure, and boundaries are a tool to achieving just that. So when you do the work to find out what you need during sex, for example, or relationship, and then tell people, well, that resentment is going to melt away. We move out of caretaking or out of depending on other people for our own satisfaction and into the world of responsible pleasure. So here's an example of setting a boundary with a new sex partner. Okay, I can't wait to have sex with you, but first, let's use a condom. And if we can't, I'm going to have to refrain. I know, right? That sounds hard, but stating your boundary clearly and concisely is going to help you get your need met in that situation. And remember, this takes practice, but it gets a lot easier. Okay, let's say you've got a long-term partner and they're in the mood for sexual penetration, but you're not. You could say, I don't want to do that right now, but I would be up for a cuddle, a massage, or making out. How does that sound to you? So boundaries are connected to consent, and consent is connected to your individual agency. So when we aren't in the habit of getting consent or setting boundaries, it is so easy for people to get lost inside their relationships and lose touch with what actually makes them happy. But when we do create a culture of consent and boundaries, well, trust me, the sex becomes hotter because no one's caretaking and no one's dependent on the other for satisfaction. You're just two capable, adult, competent people. And those are the precise conditions we need to have healthy sex that's erotic, fun, and exploratory. In conclusion, when our emotional boundaries are respected, we feel valued, we feel honored, we feel safe, and boundaries can be healing. They can help you not feel taken advantage of. And while maintaining boundaries can be difficult, it increases self-compassion and self-esteem by allowing people to prioritize their own voice, their own needs, and their own pleasure. Jennifer Fried, PhD, is the best-selling author of Use Your Planets Wisely. She's a renowned psychological astrologer and a social-emotional education trainer. As a regular contributor to Goop, she's penned 10 books on personal growth and wellness and has been interviewed for her expertise by the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and Vogue. She's the co-founder of AHA, a nonprofit equipping teenagers, educators, and parents with social and emotional intelligence to dismantle apathy, prevent despair, and interrupt hate-based behavior. Find more Jen Fried at jenniferfried.com or on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Fried or Twitter at Dr. Jen Fried. Thank you for being here today with me.
I love to come and be with you because I think this is one of the most important topics we need to unbuckle, so to speak, because where shame lives, we don't feel alive.
Wow. Where shame lives, we don't feel alive.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think sexuality in particular is one of the biggest caves of shame that we all have. Even now, you know, and boundaries are all a part of that. Like, imagine a world in which every single person felt completely entitled to love their body, whatever shape it was, to love the sex they loved, to not like the sex they didn't like, the frequency, the timing.
Oh my God, Jen, you just painted a picture of a beautiful world.
I know.
You wrote this wonderful article for Maria Shriver, the Sunday paper. And I just thought, oh my God, let's finally break down boundaries, what they are, why we need them.
Well, they're a moving target. You know, one thing, when we think of a boundary, it's actually something that we're constantly having to decide in negotiating relationship. It's not like the boundary I made yesterday on the kind of quiet time I needed that day is the same one I might need today. So the most important thing about setting boundaries is that you have to check in with yourself deeply first so that you can be honest and authentic about what this current boundary setting entails. And in my article, it really covers the difference between implicit boundaries and explicit boundaries. And I want to give my partner, Rendy, full credit. She came up with that concept. But once she did, I went, oh my God, that's everything. So let's break it down
into implicit boundary and explicit boundary. Thank you, Rendy.
So let's just take the topic of touch.
Okay.
So implicit boundary around touch can go either way. It could be, let's say I'm hanging out with a guy I'm attracted to, and he moves toward me and I'm not quite ready yet to do something, so I just move away. That's an implicit boundary. Another implicit boundary with touch is, this happens a lot with the teens I work with because they don't know yet, they'll get right in somebody's face and they won't ask permission to get closer. They'll just smush up right there. And all of this is implicit. They didn't say, hey, I'd really like to get closer to you and smell your hair. They just move right in. And on the other hand, if somebody's getting close to you and you don't want them to, implicit is move away. Explicit is, hey guy, back up a second. I'm not quite ready for this. The implicit is not stated, it's implied. And the explicit is when we actually have a very clear contract with somebody about whatever that boundary might be.
A lot of us just operate in the realm of implicit boundaries. And then we have resentments because we're like, well, I thought you could have read my body language. I pulled away. Why didn't you know? Or I gave you a look. then how do we have explicit boundaries? So let's say I'm out with a guy and he leans over, tries to kiss me, and I distract myself. I pick up the phone and then I'm like, well, we should go. Time's up. You know, I'll be like, I have an early day tomorrow, and it's because I don't want to kiss this guy on a date. And then I get home and the next day he's texting me, can we go out again? Can we do all these things? And that to me was like an implicit avoidant boundary. I was avoiding a situation. But what could I explicitly have said in regards to touch there?
This is why I think most explicit boundary making you have to think about in advance.
Because so hard.
You're usually in shock when somebody violates a boundary. You're in your reptile brain, fear, flee, you know, something like that.
Right.
So you have to know if you're out there dating that people are going to do things you don't want to engage in. And so I would just have a handy sentence ready. I'm not ready for this right now. That would just change the entire dynamic. It's not mean. It's not blaming. It's not shaming. I'm not ready for this right now.
Right. But you make it sound so easy, Jen.
I've practiced a really, really long time, and I'm not going to say it's easy, but like anything you practice, it gets easier and easier and easier just to be upfront and honest with people. Mm-hmm. And I have found, unless they have a personality disorder, I'm going to make that disclaimer, every single time people appreciate it. Because, you know, these women or men that are getting mixed signals and they don't know how to read them, they're coming back with texts, they're coming back with more needs, they're coming back. And now it becomes a lengthier rejection process.
Right. Now, here's the other thing. Just because you say no to someone and someone's hurt doesn't mean you did the wrong thing. I've appreciated boundaries. When people have set them with me, I get a little bit like, oh, you know, because we're not used to it. But then I'm like, I really respect that person more. I know the lines to stay in. It's just, it's easier.
It's way easier to say exactly what you mean instead of having everyone playing a decoder game. You know, it's just very hard because we don't have all the same signals and all of that. And I think there's one thing I do want to say, because boundary setting is a vulnerable thing on both sides. The person doing it feels very vulnerable and the person hearing it, obviously, that the most important thing is always safety, emotional safety, physical safety. So I'll give you an example. There's a lovely friend of a friend who's a really great woman. She came over for some reason, maybe an astrology reading, because you know I do that. And then she said, I live near you. I'd really like to strike up a friendship and have you come over. And I said to her, I absolutely adore you. Honestly, I do not have time enough right now in my life for my dearest friends. So I'm a no on that. But don't take that as an insult. I just don't want you to misread this.
Oh, okay. I'm so glad you brought this up, Jen. That is so tricky. I've had so many situations where people want to be friends and then I feel bad and then I make plans and I cancel. So just to let someone know, this has nothing to do with you. I actually don't have the bandwidth right now to, I have the people in my life that I love.
And guess what? I see her at my other friend's house. We get the warmest hugs and I feel like we're totally good because I really meant it. And it's true. And Emily, you're a lot like me. You've got your crew. You hardly ever see them. The last thing you need to do is add another person on the roster.
What do you do if you set a boundary with someone and they break it and then you have to set it again?
In that case, I think the only move is to ignore their behavior and take a couple of days away and then have a conversation about the conversation. Like, we had this conversation and then you didn't actually do what we agreed on. Tell me about that. But you can't do it right in the moment because it's too hot, because they're clearly not listening. And so they're into some kind of complex themselves.
I love that. Tell me about it. What part of me setting this boundary didn't you understand?
Exactly. It's like we had this agreement and you violated it again. Tell me about that because it's not working for me. But you got to take a couple days off because people are very defensive because they obviously did something unconsciously. Unless they're openly hostile, then get the hell away from them. Because right. Sometimes people won't adhere to boundaries because they have a little bit of sociopathy or conduct disorder. And you've really got to keep your distance from those characters.
What do you do if you haven't set a boundary and then you have to retroactively set one?
Well, to me, the first thing you have to do is sit down with them and say, we're so bad at boundaries. Like, you have to own it. Like, we're horrible at this. And so baby steps, like, I'll name one I'd like, you name one you'd like, you know, you got your scaffolding. So you really have to go back to the beginning and just declare with each other you've been merged and you have never done boundaries and you're both pleasers and like, let's just figure this out now. Because boundaries actually make for better erotic tension.
Oh, let's talk about boundaries and erotic tension.
Well, what makes you so hot for somebody in the very beginning is that they seem like a distinct other, a distinct other. They're not you. And the reason I think we get so sexually attracted to people is we want to kind of get through what we perceive as such a boundary of someone else. And the closer you get to people and the looser your boundaries are, usually the less hot for them sexually you are. Because it's a distinct autonomous person that gets us turned on.
Mm, so true. It's the unknown. And then also even with kink play or dominant, submissive, BDSM kind of play, when there's boundaries too, you know exactly what's on the table, what's off the table, and then you get to kind of play with those edges.
You know, underneath all of this resistance to telling people who we really are is a deep shame. A shame that it's not okay to want what we want and to be who we are. And let's say somebody's getting in a sex position with you, even though you like the other positions and you don't want that sex position. I know so many people that will just go along with it and hope it just gets over with.
Yeah.
But wow. Wouldn't it be amazing, especially if you really want to have a good sexual chemistry, to go pause, let's go back to that other one or try this, you know?
And in the moment with your partner, you could say, yeah, I don't want to try this, but I want to try something else. And it's just, I don't know, I guess it's just okay to say no. And also not make assumptions that just because your partner, and this goes into like the consent conversation as well, but just because your partner wanted something in the past doesn't mean that they want it the next time you're together. They might want it again in the future, but we can set boundaries every time we're with someone as well when it comes to sex.
And that's why I was saying, don't ever think because you've set this boundary, even the next day, it's the exact same conversation. So part of it is being nimble and flexible and creating relationships with people where we have this permission to not be the same person every day. Because who is? Let's be honest.
Right. And that would be boring. Okay. Let's talk about communication boundaries.
I have such a good example of this. It's really touchy, but here it goes. So I have a close friend. And he and I have been friends for a long time. And every now and then in conversations, when I'm there with other people, like at a party, he'll say something about, oh yeah, this person, they're Jewish. Oh, this person, they're Jewish. And I'd be always thinking, why the hell do you have to talk about whether they're Jewish or not? I don't understand. But I didn't ever want to confront him at a party because what a downer. And I don't really understand what's going on here. So one day I was with him at just me and him and his wife. And he said that thing again. And I go, hey, let's call him Jeff. Jeff, what's with all the naming who's Jewish? Like, hello, what is that about? And he goes, oh, you know, I love the Jews. Like, I love them. I said, okay. Like, and he's Italian. He goes, you know, the Italians, the Jews. I said, but I just need you to know how it lands when you keep pointing out somebody's like ethnicity or whatever. Is it kind of feels offensive? Like, why do you have to single that out about them? It's not a universal trait or something. And I said, so be careful with that one, because I think people could really misread you. And now I'm understanding it's out of affection. He goes, thank you.
That's a beautiful example.
So the conversation one is all about finding the right time, having a really good, clear breath, because it's never good in reactivity, to say what you need to say, even though it's scary. I mean, I was scared. My heart was pounding to say, you know, what's this about? I didn't know why he kept doing it. So it was scary. But I found out it's actually because he has this big crush on Jewish people. Okay, great. Okay, here's another one. I've got example after example.
I love it.
Because this is kind of my edge. Is today I was supposed to have this appointment on Zoom with a medical practitioner. And they didn't call. And they didn't call. And I sent a text and I sent a text and they didn't call. And then they were 45 minutes late and they called and I'm on my way to something. And it's a first time thing. And this guy goes, hey, I'm so glad I caught you. Sorry I didn't catch you before. It went to voicemail. And I went, actually, it didn't. You didn't call me. It didn't go to voicemail. I don't feel comfortable working with you because I don't deal well with people not telling the truth. And he was like, whoa, yeah. But it was real for me. Like, don't blow smoke up the you know what.
Right.
You weren't there. You didn't call. The phone tells you whether somebody called or not.
Right. Exactly.
I said, if you had just started this phone call with, hey, I really blew it. I wasn't there when I said I'd be, we'd be good. But you had to go lie about it.
This is such a great example of people show you who they are right away.
And I couldn't agree more with that because, again, at our nonprofit, we've hired and worked with people as you have now for 21 years. And I promise you, without exception, no one that started badly actually was a good team member. Not one. So you kind of see people's colors right off. And if you're making a lot of excuses and rationalizations for them, and this goes for lovers too.
Well, let's talk about that.
Well, I can't stand it when people are going out with people and like there's all these red flags just zooming, like they didn't text you back. They ghosted you, they sleep with you, they didn't, you know, whatever happens. And then the person's going, but oh, but then they were so this when I was with them and they were so amazing in bed. And I'm listening going, oh my God, this is never going to work.
Right, Jen,
well, also I can admit a thing I did years ago that might help your listeners. I had a very close man friend. He was like my best friend and he was so hot and so attractive and flirty and a really good friend in some ways. And then he was exhibiting some very bad other behavior. But because I was getting so many benefits from these other things, I just kept turning my head like that doesn't exist. That doesn't exist. That because I was just getting fed on these kind of other levels of, you know, erotic friendship. And he was really kind. There were other things. But there was some very bad behaviors going on. And it ended up all blowing up in my face. I mean, it really... It's like the bad behaviors became cumulative and caused a certain incident that wasn't directly about me. But then I had to just go, what the hell was I doing there?
Right.
Just because it felt great to have his attention. It wasn't good enough to compromise my values.
And I think to go back to why boundaries are so hard, Jen, I didn't grow up in an environment, no one ever asked me what I was feeling, my opinion, what I was thinking. And even if I tried to voice it, it wasn't entertained. It didn't matter what I wanted for dinner or where I wanted to go or how my day was. And so I think not having that practice in life, it was much easier to go along with people with what they wanted than to speak up for myself. And so I really had to learn through therapy, through good friendships, people like you, Jen, dear friends, that it's okay. And when you do it, nothing feels better than setting a boundary. I even look back in the last few years so many times. So Jen, yeah, I want you to go easy on yourself because I'm trying to do it as well. And I've been practicing boundaries a lot and it's still hard.
And I'm going to tell you that it's like 2 steps forward, 10 steps back because, you know, the other thing I've very much been present to. And so I want all your listeners to think about this, whether they're male, female, or other identified. For a woman to set a boundary, she's often called a bitch. And I got to tell you, that has backed me up sometimes, you know, like, oh, I don't want this person to think this of me. If I say that wasn't a good job, or you didn't actually do what you said you were going to do, or whatever, I think that that's an underneath cultural narrative that has really pushed back on a lot of women from saying their truth.
I think you're absolutely right. That's it.
Or, no one wants or you're to be a bitch. Frigid. Or you're frigid.
Or like, you're frigid because you don't want to have sex. Or you said no.
Or you don't want to have anal penetration just because you don't, you know, it's like, oh, then you're really like an uptight prude or something. Like all this name calling and underneath that, especially for women,
exactly.
We grew up, I grew up, you grew up, having to defer our needs and wants in the primacy of a male relationship. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. They were first and foremost, what they wanted was important. I almost feel like that was in like the doctrine of becoming a woman. Like if a man asked for it, especially sexually or romantically, you want to be a good partner. And to be a good partner, you had to say yes to them.
So I want to say on behalf of the male identified people, I have noticed that that complicity that women were a part of in not saying their wants and needs have also created very big distances in male-female relationships. Because you can only think in your own lives when you've steamrolled your way into something, it's not intimacy and it doesn't feel good. So the fact that men aren't getting the true feedback is not advantageous to them either.
We'll all benefit from setting better boundaries. I have a lot of friends whose moms have said to them, well, just give them a blowjob when they want one. Just do it. That's your duty as a wife.
Well, but there's another side to this that I do want to say, which is controversial, you know, which is this. There was a woman named Pat Love who was what she calls low testosterone. She wasn't that sexual. And her husband, who was an athletic coach, high T, very sexual. And so she was getting sick of how much sex he wanted. So she, as a scientist, thought, I'm going to prove that you don't need that much sex in your life. It's not that important. So what she did is she started doing all this research. It kind of came out that it was important. So then she thought she would get shot up with some testosterone and just kind of see like major doses. She said she would and could hump anything all the time. Like it didn't matter to her what, when, where, that she became a beast of like sexual desire. So then she had more empathy for her husband. But the whole point of the story is her recommendation in long-term marriages with women and men is if you got a low T woman, sometimes it's the opposite, but if you have a low T woman and a high T man, it is good to do quickies even when you don't feel like it, because men get intimate by having sex. Women, you know, need the intimacy, but it's kind of helped me in my mind, because sometimes in my long-term relationship, oh gosh, I don't really feel like having sex, but I always know that we're way better off when we've had sex. Like, it's just such a good thing to do.
Yes, it's true.
So I don't want to make it like it's all bad to give into sex sometimes when you don't want it. It's just you've got to really choose the why of it. Why am I doing this?
Right. You know, and why am I and why don't I want to? Like, if you're just doing it to please your partner and it's something you don't want to do or an act you want to do, fine. But if months have gone by or weeks have gone by and you still don't want it, you still don't want to, then it's look at yourself. Yeah. What is it that you don't want?
Would and sometimes, honestly, in the long-term relationships, you get lazy, sexual laziness. And honestly, you don't have the same like motivation. You have to practice sex to like keep it going and get good at it with a long-term relationship.
You do. Yes. I love that example.
When we come back, Dr. Jed and I answer questions about how boundaries affect your sex life.
All right, Jen, these are some questions where I think we can apply some boundaries. We can help people with their boundary setting. This is Victoria, 27, in Tennessee. She's navigating being a unicorn on dating apps. She's 27 and discovered her love for being a third in a female-female-male threesome, a female-male-female, or a male-female, all the threesomes. I'm huge in communication, especially when having a threesome. However, I have three horrible experiences these past few times. Not sexually, that's been incredible. Experimenting with things I've never imagined. However, a partner from the couple I would be seeing would go batshit crazy because of jealousy after the fourth or fifth time we would hook up. I very much established boundaries, communication, and limits before meeting the couples, aka, will I sleep over? Do you allow kissing? When texting, do you all prefer group, separate, or all the above? The list goes on. However, the situation I was in recently was insane. Even after all the boundaries were set, are there any recommendations how to keep things just fun to avoid the relationship drama? I'm a unicorn because I'm emotionally unavailable. Working with a therapist to get over some sexual trauma to fix that. Ha ha. All right, Victoria. Well, first off, good for you for navigating your trauma by still getting your needs met sexually, saying I am not going to get emotionally involved with you, which is why it makes it easier to set boundaries when you don't have your emotions in it. But if you've had three horrible experiences, what I'm hearing is that you saw the couples four or five times, and maybe that's too much, because if you have sex with someone four or five, I can see the first time could be great, but four or five times there's some familiarity. One of the partner gets jealous because their partner is a little bit more friendly with you this time. So maybe that's a boundary that you have to set by rolling back and saying, I'm just going to be with each couple max of three times. I don't know. What do you think, Jen?
I'm just smiling so hard because I just love the courage and the bravery of this woman that's just out there going, I want to be a three of anybody. You know, I just love it. I agree with you completely, Emily. I think that you can make all the rules in the world and they will never legislate deep, dark emotions. Never, ever, not once. And, you know, jealousy and possessiveness, you cannot make a rule to make those go away. So too many times creates bonding and attachment for most people.
I've realized that too when I've tried to keep relationships casual. And if I see someone once a week, it's fine. But when it gets into two to three times a week, you start to get attached. it becomes a relationship, you know? So there is a big time component when you're thinking about intimacy and relationships, and people, even besides myself, email, oh, well, it was casual, but then we started acting as if we were in a relationship, but we weren't. And that's because usually it's time, too much time.
Yeah. Too much frequency of anything creates a kind of glue.
Yes. Okay. This is from Kat, 28 in Pennsylvania. About a month ago, I matched with a guy on a dating app. We connected right away. We've been messaging back and forth ever since. I started to create an idea in my head about what he'd be like in person. I developed a huge crush on him. Finally, this past weekend, we had our first virtual date. To my surprise, he was like nothing I imagined. I could tell within 5 minutes there wasn't going to be any connection. The date went on for 2 hours because I couldn't figure out how to end it.
Oh, God. Oh. This is a nightmare.
Now he wants to have an in-person date, but I'm not into him. I don't want to hurt his feelings or make him think he did anything wrong. I wasn't feeling it. Ghosting him would be easy, but I know how crappy that feels. How do I tell him I'm not into him without hurting his feelings? I love this because so many of us, we can eradicate ghosting right now if we can help people realize how to let someone know you simply don't have a romantic attraction for him. That's it. Not feeling it. You just say it. To me, my first thing is you just say, hey, it was so nice to meet you. Our conversation was great. I don't feel a romantic connection to you. I don't feel that thing, but I wish you well with dating.
I like your words the best. I don't feel a romantic attraction to you. And I think it's very fair game. If you've never seen anyone visually and then you see them, you're going to know within 5 seconds whether that's a fit for you. And I think it's really lovely and polite to say, you know, this is really great to meet you in a visual way, but it's not a romantic attraction for me. That's the nicest thing you could ever say to anyone.
Yeah. And I think we have to remind people that you don't owe anyone anything. Isn't it interesting that you have one date with someone and you think, oh, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings who I barely know, so I'm just going to ghost them, which is actually going to hurt their feelings more because we're so afraid of what, fear of people being mad at us? We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, so we just actually end up hurting it more because we don't want to have these conversations?
Well, let me ask you this, Emily, because I'm curious. It's happened to me in my life.
Yeah.
Have you had anyone say to you directly, this isn't a romantic sexual attraction for me? Have you had it happen?
I've had it happen. I had a guy say to me once, we went on a few dates, and it was kind of hot, sexy, makeout sesh, and then he didn't. For like a week, I could tell he didn't call me or something. And he said that he was starting to date somebody, but who knows? Maybe that was an excuse, but I've never had anyone say they weren't attracted to me in that way.
Well, that's because you're just too hot. But let me tell you, I have had that happen.
Okay. Tell me what happened.
And, well, you know, when I was younger, I was dating men and women, everybody all over the place. And I would just hit on anybody. I mean, I was very like... I was just crazy. So there would be a couple of times there would be a woman or a man and like, I'm not into you. And guess what? Freedom. Don't take up my time. Don't take up my space. It didn't like throw me down a big hill because it wasn't like I was making my entire life on this one person.
Right.
I was just out there really seeing what was possible.
Yeah, exactly. And it allowed you to move on quickly. I think the more honest we are with people, first off, we feel better about it. They're going to feel better and you're allowing them to move on quicker. Don't obsess about why you weren't enough for this person. There's so many people in the world too. I think that's a very healthy attitude. Yes.
So now let's go the other way though.
Okay.
I've had to tell at least, because you know, I was out there, at least 25 people I wasn't attracted to them.
Wow.
So how many have you had to do that with?
Oh, I've had to do it many times to people. And maybe yes. I've blocked that someone said that to me. It's not, I don't think so, but but I've said to many people, I'm just not feeling it. I just wasn't feeling attraction all the time. Even, and sometimes you say it and they're like, oh, well, I wasn't either. And they get that attitude because they don't want to be rejected, but that's better than the alternative. So let them protect themselves. Let them do what they need to do. And I think something else, advice here to everybody in listening to Kat's story, she said they were messaging every day for a month until they finally met. That's on you too. I highly recommend that people do not spend months and months and months texting with someone and you haven't seen them yet. That is time you'll never get back. You're building this image of a guy in your head and then you meet them and it's, you know, in 5 minutes. You can't get that time back. So
yeah, let's have a recipe for that. If you're chatting with anyone or on the phone with anyone, get a visual within a week.
Yep. Definitely
and
a
not,
week.
And not a photo, actual moving picture.
A moving picture. Do it on FaceTime. And I love getting to see someone online before you meet. I don't want to drive across town, sit down and be like, So, okay, this is about cheating. This is from Rachel, 24, Massachusetts. Love your show. I learned so much. This is about porn and I'd love your help. I'm a very open-minded person. Don't care if you watch porn or what you're into. My boyfriend watches porn, sometimes trans porn, which is fine. But I saw on his phone, he messages trans escorts or female escorts and never goes through with it. And even though he told me he was on Grindr, we had a long conversation about it. He was confused as to why he liked it, but he thinks it's taboo. And I talked to my own therapist. She said not to worry. I feel like he crosses the line sometimes when he messages someone. I feel like it's cheating. Or am I being too jealous? I don't mean to come off like I'm against it. I would just appreciate some guidance because it makes me feel insecure sometimes knowing that it's something I need to work on. Let me know. Thanks. So this is interesting. So, and it is a great boundary question because only you had to decide in your relationship what is cheating and what is not. So this would be the matter of speaking openly and honestly about her jealousy and about what a boundary is in the relationship. Because to some couples, texting someone else, especially an escort, might be considered cheating and it might be hurtful. So there just might be some more, you need to maybe find out a little bit more about it. I know he said to you, it's nothing, but I think saying, well, tell me what goes on in the moment. What do you feel in your body when you text these escorts? Because I don't really understand it. You could say to Rachel, like, to me, it makes me feel like I'm not enough or that you want me to be trans. I mean, I think it's normal that you would be jealous though, if you find your partner's messaging someone on a dating app, but I don't think it's cheating per se. Every couple gets to decide what that is in their relationship. What do you think, Jen?
Well, number one, I would be so jealous. So I just want to say that. Who wouldn't be jealous? Number two, the very easiest way to find out what healthy boundaries are around something like this is say, okay, does that mean that tomorrow I'm going to start texting the certain kind of guy that I'm attracted to and not follow through with it, but have these kind of erotic little flirtations? Is that like now what our boundaries are? Is that what you're hoping this relationship is going to be, is this sort of dalliance on texts with other erotic possibilities?
Ooh.
Like, let's really talk about it. And I know for me, that's for me, that would be a no. No, that would be a no. But God, I don't know. Like you're saying, Emily, that's up to you and your partner to discuss. But I never like the idea that somebody's doing something unilaterally.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, make it a discussion. Is this the kind of relationship we want?
Right. I love that you made it universal and you said it's about both of them. Is this what we're doing now? Because I would, now it's my turn to go texting people if that's what we're doing. And even if it's not something that you don't want to do, Rachel, I think it's a great way to put it. I mean, Rachel, you found it on the phone, right? So you're digging for something and you just found it. So let's bring it all out in the open.
And the other thing for me is, you know, you can't help who you're attracted to. That's hardwired. I am so curious about trans attraction for this partner and like, what is that and what about it excites you? I think I have a little of that myself. So I think it's interesting. Yeah. So I think, what is that? And then to talk about it and get real with it so that you can get closer to the person you're trying to understand.
Yeah, because ultimately when we try to clarify these boundaries with someone and it actually ends up being a healthy conversation, you feel so much safer and closer to your partner. It's actually a beautiful thing. And then you understand your relationship dynamic so much better. It's clarifying.
And the other thing I've noticed for myself that might be true in this relationship is the less that we can really talk about and be understood around our attractions, the more compulsive they can become because of the shame.
Right, exactly. So maybe if your partner feels completely accepted around it, they might be less likely to do so. They might make it more about your relationship. Yeah, you're right. That's when we act out, when we feel judged and shamed. All good points. After the break, we answer a question from Samantha, who's wondering, how do you know when it's time to escalate sexually and when to hold back? Okay, this is from Samantha, 23, in New York City. How do you navigate sex and dating without getting emotionally attached? I feel like there are so many rules and conflicting opinions on when the right time is to sleep with someone and maintaining a good reputation, being respected. For example, if you give in too early and then you're seen as too easy. how do I navigate these relationships? So it's interesting. How does she not get emotionally attached, essentially? You know, that's a tough one. I mean, it is tough to say, I don't want to catch feelings, and now I did. And she wants to talk about sleeping with, when is the right time to sleep with someone? I don't believe that there's a certain like number of dates or times where you should wait 3 weeks. We get to decide the right time. So when you feel comfortable with someone, when you feel safe enough with somebody. And also the thing about not wanting to get emotionally attached. I wonder what the, like we heard from our earlier email who said that she knows she's not emotionally available, but she's working through trauma and therapy. So I want to know, what is it about getting emotionally attached that isn't interesting to you? Are you working through that? And then what do you think about this, Jen?
You and I pretty much agree on everything. I don't think anyone can quantify the days, the nights, the whatever. That's all ridiculous. It's all exterior based. You have to go with your inner knowing. But I can promise you this. When in doubt, sex is not the answer. Mm. When in doubt, sex is not the answer. So it cannot be that you're having sex to try to bridge a big gulf of feeling connected. That's a bad reason. So to me, the best time to have the first sexual encounter is when you're feeling so intimate that it feels organic to the situation.
It's great. If you don't know, you know. If you don't know, oh, I don't know if I'm ready. You're not ready.
No, because why rush it? Honestly, there's no reason to rush sex except for trying to bury insecurity.
Right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't want this person to judge me for not having sex with them and it make me feel...
Or we have nothing to talk about. We better have sex.
Right, exactly. Right. Yes. Or I feel bad they bought me dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
I owe them something. Okay, this is from Hashem. My partner right now is into BDSM, curious and more into violence and pain than I am, but I was abused as a child and any violence pulls me out of the moment and I can't enjoy it. I tried... And I can do gentle slapping, biting, scratching, and all of that, but I definitely can't do choking or any real pain or seriously aggressive stuff. I told him this early on, but he's still pushing it months later. There was a point last week where I got really upset, told him to stop, and it felt traumatizing. I wonder where boundaries have to be respected and not pushed, and whether violence is a boundary that should or shouldn't be pushed. I also wonder if this is just sexual incompatibility. If two people can't agree on the level of violence they're okay with, how would you advise people on trying violence in the bedroom? What happens if one person is it okay, but the other person wants it? I mean, violence is never okay. If you have a contract and you're in a dominant submissive relationship and you have contracts and safe words and then you have some kind of, you know, sex play consensually, that's okay. But this does not sound healthy to me. Jen.
Major red flags. I think that any kind of aggressive act that is not in respect of somebody's spoken desires is a violation, and there's no excuse for it.
Right.
It sounds like this person is trying to rationalize, like, this is a sexual thing. It's not a sexual thing.
But isn't it interesting going towards that in a traumatizing relationship where there was abuse, but then sometimes we're often attracted to those things that are bringing up traumatic memories. So I would say that this is a time to maybe work through this stuff, get into therapy. And I don't think a partner that's pushing your boundaries over and over and over again is the healthy person for you. Thank you for your email.
Yes, and I do want to mention one more category we didn't get to.
Oh, yes.
Resources. Because this has shown up so much in counseling people that women or men, it doesn't matter, is giving and giving, like, oh, the car, the food, the presents, and the other one's taking, 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 or the other one just takes it and doesn't even ask for it. This is a very slippery slope when you don't have very clear boundaries around who's paying, what do we own together, what's mine, what's yours. I mean, this is fundamental because I had a really good friend, and God bless her, she would go to Bali and be with this guy that she was really hot for. And without even saying anything, he would expect her to pay for every single thing. And, you know, she was a little blinded by the sexual stuff. But after a while, she'd be texting me and I'd be like, nope, that's not a good deal.
This is a great point. So he's making assumptions. And I think we see this in all gendered relationships, right? Where maybe it was that one partner is always paying and then the person who's always taking is assuming, well, they wanted to pay. They said they wanted to pay one. I think you have to revisit these conversations in all relationships, or at least have them for the first time. And then say, how are you feeling about how we're handling our resources? So Jen, give me some examples here too.
Well, it's happened to me a lot because I am generous and then people might not remember. I think of one person in particular I was dating, and they had less money than me at that time. And I took them out a couple of times. And the next thing I know, they wanted me to take care of their son and they wanted me to walk their dog. And like, there was a lot of assumptions about what I owed them because of our differences economically and culturally. Oh. And it was really a touchy subject because I could tell there was a whole bitterness attached to like, well, you owe me because I come from harder circumstances. And I had to just say, this isn't working for me because yes, I wanted to take you out to dinner, but I don't want to take care of you. This isn't the arrangement we were making. We never talked about this, you know?
It's such a fine line there too, right? Because then you could feel that someone starts getting passive aggressive often around money too. Well, you have all this money and why wouldn't you keep paying for me? And sometimes we do keep spending our money and doing stuff like that because we just don't want to have the tricky conversations.
One more example, because this comes up a lot here in Montecito, so I want to say this, where there's the wealthy woman and then she gets the kind of hot younger guy and he's like so into it because she's going to be the sugar mama kind of thing. And almost 99%, I'm going to tell you a statistic of basically anecdotal experience, the sex goes away. Because who wants to F their mother, really? You know, if you're the sugar mama, at some point, that gets really disempowering.
Yep. Well, what about the women sleeping with their sugar daddy?
Well, that goes more to our psychology of we do things we don't want to do because we want to keep the gravy train.
Right.
Okay. That's very different. But I do want to say I had a great success with a woman that called me. She was dating a guy. He didn't have as much money, but he was doing fine. You know, it wasn't like he was rich, but he wasn't poor. He had a job. And I said, if you just follow this one advice, because she was independently wealthy, I said, this will save your relationship. Don't pay for him. Like every now and then you can say, I'm going to go on a trip. I'd like you to come. I'll pay. But don't start giving him money and paying for him. And she would call me like every few months and go, oh, I just want to just pay. I paid. But their sex life stayed alive because the boundary. He was a man. She was a woman. She wasn't taking over his life, even though he wished she would. Of course he did.
Oh, did he ever say anything to her? Did he ever say, I wish you'd pay for me more?
No, he'd drop hints like, oh, I only owe $6,000 on this motorcycle, you know, whatever.
Right.
People drop hints all the time. It's just don't fill in the gap. Keep the tension, because when we provide people resources that they could have made for themselves, we give them a not so hidden message. You can't really do this on your own. You have to rely on me. And that's right. Not sexy.
And then you're giving them a crutch. They can make the money. They can get out there. They're just sort of delaying something that they actually have to work on themselves. Oh, I love the money one. The money boundary is big. Thank you, Jen. How can people find you? What's exciting? What's happening in your world, Jen?
I want people to follow me on Dr. Jennifer Fried on Instagram because I'm posting my articles and some of my videos. And then jenniferfried.com, you can join the Venus Club. I really like to interact with people and know what's up. And my favorite topics are relationships, spirituality, astrology, sexuality, and social justice. So hit me up on all those things. And I'm just always so honored to be on this show with you, Emily, because over this time we've known each other, I just love you more and more.
Oh, Jen, thank you so much. You're such a dear friend. You're so wise. I love having you on the show. And I love reading all of your things that you're doing and all of your articles. And thank you for being a dear friend. That's it for today's episode. See you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.